KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Elected leaders in Utah and Nevada are leading the charge to strip the president of the ability to protect culturally important land under the Antiquities Act. The law was established more than a century ago and was used to set aside such national treasures as the Grand Canyon. But those powers are part of a tug of war during the past three presidential administrations over how much to protect land and resources the tribes consider important. We'll find out what the Antiquity Act does and what might its demise mean going forward. We're back right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Tribal leaders are assessing what the next Trump administration means for their communities. Tamara Grove is a Republican state senator from Lower Brule, South Dakota. She says there's reason to be hopeful in the next administration, namely the representation of states with high tribal populations with the incoming government.
I'm hopeful that this 4 years will include the Native American community. When you have people like John Thune in office who says South Dakota, right? Like, we've got nine tribes here. So I just really believe that will open up some doors.
On the other hand, Pine Ridge Democrat Representative Puri Poyer says she's cautiously optimistic, including with some cabinet picks, like former North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum for Secretary of the Interior.
It seems like that he has a good grasp on trust responsibilities with Native American tribes and the treaty obligations. I hope he holds the BIA accountable in all aspects. I hope he initiates policy reform and really weighs out their performance when it comes to public safety efforts.
Burgum previously prioritized tribal relations during his time as governor. In Alaska, Bethel's tribal government recently repatriated the remains of four Yupik ancestors taken from the area more than a century ago. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more.
At the Bethel Memorial Cemetery at the edge of the tundra, a large wooden cross protruding from a single gravesite bears only the words, "Four Yupik Ancestors." In November, the partial remains of four Yupik inhabitants of the Bethel area were finally laid to rest by Bethel's tribe, the Arutzaharamute Traditional Native Council, known as ONC. They'd been stored at the University of Pennsylvania Museum of Archaeology and Anthropology for more than a century. The repatriation is the product of a years-long process under the Federal Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA. The law has facilitated the transfer of the remains of tens of thousands of Native Americans stored in museum collections and laboratories back to federally recognized tribes since its passage in 1990. Nevertheless, hundreds of thousands of remains and sacred objects still remain in the possession of museums, universities, and federal agencies across the United States. At the request of ONC in November, the city of Bethel agreed to dig a gravesite for the remains at the Bethel Memorial Cemetery. In a meeting of the Bethel City Council shortly after the burial, Acting City Clerk Kevin Morgan shared an email sent to the city by the tribe describing the remains.
It was an adult male, the cranium and mandible of a female, mandible and part of the skull of a female, and the cranium and cranial bones of about a 15-year-old female.
Notice of the ancestral remains as required under NAGPRA was first made by the National Park Service in late 2022, though it is unclear when Bethel's tribe received the remains. ONC did not respond to multiple requests for comment. Little is known about the four recently buried Yupik ancestors, but according to the Federal Register, the remains were removed from a site near Bethel in September 1907 as part of a Western Alaska expedition led by Penn Museum's General Curator of American Archaeology, George Byron Gordon. That same year, Gordon collected and removed hundreds of cultural items from the region as part of a canoe expedition of the Kuskokwim River that brought the anthropologist to Bethel. Penn Museum did not respond to multiple requests for comment about the history of the remains while in the museum's possession. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Educators, ready to transform Indigenous education? The NISN School Design Fellowship is accepting community letters of interest through January 31st at NACAinspiredschoolsnetwork.org who support this show.
Fry bread, that's the message. Support by Val's Fry Bread, providing her famous fry bread mixes and other products in wholesale and retail quantities at valsfrybread.com. Fry bread that will take you home, available wherever you live.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support great causes like National Native News. Just select KNBA-FM Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. With your support, you can help us make a difference in our community.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. When President Joe Biden restored the original boundaries for Bears Ears National Monument, he called it the first national monument to be established at the request of tribes. Biden relied on the Antiquities Act, just as Barack Obama did when he established Bears Ears. The Antiquities Act of 1906 gives power to the U.S. President to protect places with cultural, historic, and scientific importance from development. It's also a means to halt looting and desecration of important sites. The act is credited with preserving such treasures as the Grand Canyon and Effigy Mounds in Iowa. But it is criticized by ranchers and fossil fuel companies for what they call presidential overreach in terms of control over federal land. That criticism is now gaining traction in Congress with legislation to do away with the Antiquities Act. In this hour, we'll hear the Native perspective on the power of the Antiquities Act. And as always, as a listener, you can join the conversation. We're at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's now meet today's guests. Joining us first from Boulder, Colorado, is Matthew Campbell. He is the Deputy Director for the Native American Rights Fund. He's an enrolled member of the Native Village of Gamble on St. Lawrence Island in Alaska. Good morning, Matthew, and welcome back to Native America Calling.
Good morning, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Joining us from Baltimore, Maryland is Shannon O'Loughlin. She is the chief executive and attorney for the Association on American Indian Affairs. She's also a citizen of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. Shannon, hello and welcome back to NAC. It's great to have you.
Hey, halito, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Halito. And our third guest joins us while en route from Salt Lake City to Boise, Idaho, Arnold Thomas. He is the vice chairman for the Shoshone Paiute tribes of the Duck Valley Indian Reservation. Vice Chairman Thomas, hello, and welcome back to the show to you as well.
Yeah, Sean, good morning, and thank you.
Thank you all for joining us today. And Matthew, I want to begin with you, and let's talk about Barack Obama, who used the Antiquities Act to establish Bears Ears National Monument in Utah. And then in his first term, President Trump significantly cut the boundaries of the park. And then NARF got involved in that fight over the meaning of the Antiquities Act. Please explain for our listeners what that fight is about.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. And of course, the Native American Rights Fund is very much in support of the Bears Ears National Monument. As you mentioned, we work with several tribal nations to have the monument established initially and then also to defend the monument. And of course, we were glad when President Obama did designate Bears Ears National Monument the first time around at the request of tribal nations. Of course, it wasn't as large as the tribal nations had requested, but they were still very ecstatic about its creation. And then, of course, we're disappointed to hear the reports that President Trump was looking to revoke Bears Ears not long thereafter. And, of course, he did do just that in 2017. And NARF represented the Hopi tribe, Ute Mountain Ute, and Pueblo of Zuni in litigation against President Trump in defending the Bears Ears National Monument.
Matthew, much of this hinges on language in the act that gives the president discretion to determine what is the smallest land protection necessary. What is the legal question about that word, the smallest?
Yeah, thank you, Sean. I think the real question is, you know, whether or not the Antiquities Act delegates to the president the authority to create national monuments and also the authority to uncreate them. And when you look at the statute, the language is very clear that it gives the president authority to declare national monuments and to reserve lands as part of those monuments, but it doesn't give the president the authority to do the exact opposite, to undeclare them or unreserve them once they've been created. The purposes behind the Antiquities Act, the legislative discussion leading up to its passage, and its usage over the 100 years of its existence all really point in one direction, that the president only has the authority to create national monuments, not revoke them once they've been created.
And with regard to smallest land protection necessary, I mean, who determines that? What goes into making a decision like that?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Sean. And really what it boils down to is when a president is creating a national monument, he does have broad discretion in that creation to assess what type of historic objects and scientific objects are within an area, such as Bears Ears or Baja Nuevo in Arizona, and to determine in the president's discretion what lands are the smallest lands that are necessary to protect those historic and scientific objects.
Now, Joe Biden, he restored Bears Ears and also Grand Staircase Escalante. Do you now expect Donald Trump to undo what Joe Biden did earlier?
Well, we're hearing reports that that is something that the new Trump administration will be looking at. We're hoping that they don't go down that route. But if they do, I know that tribal nations are standing by to defend the monument and working to protect it.
Do you have any evidence that the new administration has eyes on reducing any other national monument boundaries?
Well, we have seen reports and requests from other leaders across the country. I think some requests from Mojave County officials requesting a look at the Baja Nuevo National Monument in Arizona. We have the governor of Utah, you know, requesting that Bears Ears and Grand Staircase be looked at again. And I think we have delegates in California asking for the Trump administration to look at some of the newly created national monuments there as well. So I think there is some of these requests happening and taking place. But of course, I think, again, the statute is very clear that president only has authority to create national monuments, and Congress actually reserved to itself the authority to revoke those once they've been created.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Congress, because critics now of the Antiquities Act say that these are decisions that should fall under the power of Congress as opposed to the presidency. And what's your thought on them? I mean, should one person, such as the president of the United States, have so much power to make such a big decision on land use?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question, Sean. And it's actually something and a debate that really goes back to the creation of the Antiquities Act. And it was a debate that was happening in the early 1900s leading to the passage of the Antiquities Act. You know, there were members of Congress that thought the president should have a more reserved power and should only have authority to reserve, you know, several hundred acres of land. And then there were delegates in the United States that thought the president should have a much broader authority to be able to act quickly to preserve not only historic but also scientific objects. And at the end of the day, Congress developed the compromise that is the Antiquities Act as we know it today, that granted the president broad discretion to protect historic and scientific objects. And it also didn't place any limits on how much land could be reserved. It gave the president that authority to determine what land was necessary. So this is a debate that's been happening for over 100 years. Congress knew what authority it was giving to the president, And I think that's where we are today.
How has the Antiquities Act been challenged in the past?
Well, you know, even after its passage, I will say that, you know, tribes and tribal nations were not always enamored with the Antiquities Act, right? It really declared that historic and antiquities on federal lands, such as perhaps human remains or other structures, petroglyphs, things that are very important to our histories, are actually federal property, right? So tribal nations haven't always been enamored with it. And we see Western states not always enamored with it as well. When Grand Staircase was first enacted or proclaimed in the late 1990s, there was litigation around the Grand Staircase National Monument, and the courts have consistently upheld the authority of the president to create national monuments.
Now, you use that word enamored. Native nations have not always been enamored with the Antiquities Act, as you state. Can you give us some examples of situations where tribes were opposed to how the law worked?
Sure. I think, you know, one example is when Native people were advocating for the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. One thing they pointed to was the Antiquities Act and the ability of the federal government to give permits to scientists and researchers to excavate certain sites, right? And so NAGPRA was partially enacted in response to the Antiquities Act and other federal laws that are out there. But I think we've seen nowadays that tribal nations have seen the Antiquities Act as a tool that can be utilized to protect many of our important places. And so I think the tides have turned a bit. But again, that history is long and tortured at times, and we've seen that history play out.
Matthew Campbell with the Native American Rights Fund, NARF. He's based in Boulder, Colorado, and he is kicking off our discussion today here on Native America Calling. It has to do with the Antiquities Act and what the future holds for that law that was established way back in 1906. Gives power to the U.S. president to protect places with cultural, historic, and scientific importance from development. If you'd like to join this conversation, if you have thoughts or insights to share with regard to the Antiquities Act, or maybe you have lands, your own tribal lands that have been impacted by the Antiquities Act over the years, give us a call. We would love to hear your story. We would love to hear your insights as well on today's conversation at Native America Calling. All you got to do is pick up your phone and call 1-800-996-2848, 1-800-996-2848, and you can join the conversation. President Donald Trump has delivered on his promise to move swiftly on his agenda for his new term in office. Among other goals, he signaled major cuts to Medicaid, changes to how Indian child welfare is handled, and changing the name of North America's highest peak. We'll take stock of the changes so far that Native Americans have a stake in on the next Native America Calling.
Send your dogs away and to leave the land alone. It's gotta be a crime somewhere in your heart you'll find. Fighting for our right to keep the future bright and protect the ones we love. In the river is our sisters and our brothers.
You are listening to Native America Calling. We're talking about recent threats to the Antiquities Act, which gives the U.S. president authority to protect land with historical and cultural value. Is there land that is culturally significant or sacred to your community that is protected by the Antiquities Act? Let us know. Call us at 1-800-996-2848, 1-800-996-2848, or connect with us on social media, Facebook, Instagram. You can do that as well. Let's hear now from Shannon O'Loughlin with the Association on American Indian Affairs. And Shannon, we just heard our first guest, Matthew Campbell, give us some of the history on the Antiquities Act. Can you tell us how the law has impacted the connections that Native nations have to culturally relevant areas?
Oh, sure. That's a great question, Sean. So the Antiquities Act is one of several pieces of federal legislation that works to protect land. And I'm saying that very generally because the Antiquities Act was not created to be a Native heritage protection law, but has been used since the 70s to help protect really important and sensitive archaeological sites. Other laws, in addition to the Antiquities Act, of course, include the National Historic Preservation Act and the Native American Graves Protection Act and the graves protection provisions within that law. And there's, oh geez, at least a dozen other laws. In addition, there's different authorities who have power to protect sacred places in addition to the Antiquities Act. So Congress, declared that the president should have the authority to declare monuments, but there's a lot of other areas in which Congress has the ultimate authority, such as creating national parks. That's done by Congress. And of course, the Antiquities Act is meant for the limited federal land holdings of the government. So it doesn't necessarily involve any lands that are not for federal government ownership, though it can be expanded. So what Congress gave to the president to set up the Antiquities Act and to make these designations is really limited to the body of federal law and other authorities within the U.S. government that also can set up and protect land. So this is just one limited way that the government can do that through presidential authority, really holding on to the idea that the president should know the lands about the lands he oversees and where protections are needed.
Shannon, what would happen to land protections if the decision were solely in the hands of Congress going forward?
Well, I think that would be a really disservice because the president and the agencies that oversee certain areas of land, like the Department of Interior, really have or are supposed to have the expertise and knowledge to care for and protect those lands as they were meant to be protected. And I think if Congress removes the authority for the president to do that, then it is a power that all of us share and can leverage to protect Native lands. If people are using this as an opportunity to kind of cut the Trump administration off from undoing lands, in a way, I think that would also be a disservice because we should not be changing our laws to protect against one bad actor. So I'm not sure that this new law that a few senators from Nevada, I believe, are trying to get passed that would really kill the Antiquities Act presidential authority. I just think that would be a disservice for all of us.
Now, you just shared that Congress does have the power to declare national parks. How has that worked out? Have there been issues with regard to how national parks have been designated, since that is an act of Congress? And can you compare that with the Antiquities Act with regard to the presidential power? I'm curious to know if there's been some issues or challenges there.
You know, and that's probably above my pay grade at this time. So I think what we should be focusing on is that this new law that the Nevada legislators are putting forward may be a distraction, because what we believe is going to be happening during this administration is not really going to be dependent on the Antiquities Act, on the other laws that allow Congress and others to set aside lands. It seems where our concerns and our attention should go to is where our laws allow for emergency and other actions to move forward without any kind of environmental monitoring or regulation or oversight. So I think our biggest fear is not necessarily that the Antiquities Act may lose its presidential authority, but how the administration is going to use other laws that can allow them to move forward on public lands, including lands that have been protected by the Antiquities Act, by dismissing all environmental regulation.
Well, give us some more details, Shannon. I mean, how could that occur? How could the new administration move forward, like you say, by not necessarily taking heed of environmental issues and other concerns? What are your most specific thoughts and concerns with regard to what that might mean and what that might look like?
Yeah, I think a lot of us were working on issues under the last Trump administration, particularly related to the building of the border wall, invisible dashed line between Mexico and the United States. President Trump at that time did was use emergency regulations that allowed federal agencies to ignore all environmental concerns, oversight, or regulatory review, and just move forward with building that wall. And we all know that there were burial sites and other places that were sacred that were damaged by that work. And so I think that they will use that as a template to move forward in other ways through our protected areas and other public lands.
And the trend we're seeing with more and more Native nations buying back land, pushing for more management of lands, where does that fit in with regard to the Antiquities Act and some of these other challenges that we're talking about today?
I think, the more and more that we can purchase back and protect lands, including not necessarily purchasing in regular fee, but also having management authority over lands. Anything that can give Native nations control and quote unquote ownership over the decisions that need to be made about lands, the better we're going to be in the long run. And I think this is time now where we really need to partner with philanthropy in conservation and environmental organizations to work to build kind of a protective wall against the lands that we know the Trump administration is going to work hard to open up to drilling.
We talked a little bit earlier about the Antiquities Act. It is separate from NAGPRA, but do you see any signals from the Trump administration about enforcing NAGPRA?
And NAGPRA is a wonderful piece of human rights legislation, and of course it was signed into law by a Republican president. If you look at all of our cultural heritage laws, you'll see that they're all passed by a bipartisan legislators. You can't get a law passed without having support on both sides of the aisle. In the last Trump presidency, we saw that NAGPRA regulations were being worked on. Of course, they didn't get passed until the Biden administration, but we saw him celebrate international repatriation with Finland. So we're hoping that because NAGPRA is a bipartisan piece of legislation, we're hoping that the Antiquities Act as well and other environmental land protection laws, which are very much backed by America as a whole. We want our lands protected. We always have. It is really a key to our celebration as America's, as Americans, that we have these sensitive cultural and environmental areas that are protected for generations to come. That's always been a value of America, and I hope that all of us can stand behind that. And so we're all going to be doing our best, Native organizations working together with others to hopefully fight off against any big plans to open up our public lands and sensitive areas. But NAGPRA, we hope that that will just continue to be implemented. I don't think there's anything else that this current administration needs to do for NAGPRA. The Safeguard Tribal Objects of Patrimony Act, which was a law passed by President Biden, and the proposed rulemaking went forward during the Biden administration. Now we're still waiting for the final rulemaking for that law to be implemented, and it's things like that that got cut off in the middle of the Biden administration that we're not sure how things are going to turn out during this one.
All right. Thank you, Shannon. I want to pivot back to Matthew Campbell. And Matthew, on Monday evening, President Trump's first evening in office, one of the sweeping executive orders that he signed was to open up Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for drilling. ANWR, what are your thoughts there? And do you see any connection there between that executive order and what we're talking about today?
Yeah, thank you, Sean. Of course, ANWR is another immensely important place to the Native people in Alaska. You know, it's the place where life began. And we've been fighting with the tribal villages and Native people up there for almost a decade to protect ANWR from further oil and gas development. And, you know, we saw that there were oil and gas lease sales recently where no leases were purchased. But it is very troubling, of course, to see President Trump trying to reopen those opportunities and relax environmental standards on those. And of course, we'll be standing with our people in Alaska to defend ANWR. It's another immensely important place.
All right. Thank you, Matthew. Let's go to the phones now. We have Chanupa. He is on the line in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. He's listening on Key Lee Radio. Hello, big brother. Thank you for calling in today.
Hey, Wolfie, that's a good thing. And one thing I wanted to ask you guys about, you know, when you do to, like our elders did, okay, a lot of them were looking at things that are happening on the... And so what's really going on is our land, okay, here in the Black Hills, they're coming to it. They're coming. And so I remember our elders did do this one thing, okay, they said, "Ma kocha kile hena onki tapi duani hechins e wasloi ki ichu kishni." So a long time ago, when our old ones were telling us the same thing, you couldn't sell, or you can even try to purchase land. And so what people are doing to this day, that same thing, and that Donald Trump turned that back around, man, and it's going to be coming. So it's time for we Indians to wake up and really look at what's happening to the white man. Wopi La Kanka, Sean, and thank you for everybody in Kili Radio and all of you. Hoka hey!
Hoka hey! Chanupa, thank you for that call coming in from Pine Ridge, South Dakota. And Shannon, you've been on the show many times, and you've heard when Chanupa calls in. He always keeps us grounded. He always reminds us of our spirituality, of our culture, and our traditions. And I want to ask you, you know, places like Bears Ears and other lands that have federal protections, what do people really need to understand? I'm thinking we have listeners all over the country, and some of these folks aren't native, and they might not even go to these areas very much. What do you really want them to understand that they might not be really getting about these areas?
Oh, wow. That's a really big question, Sean. There's so much that I would want to impart on non-natives so they understand why these lands are so important. Really, all of our lands, every place where we have ever put our feet are important and should be protected. Because we all exist with a codependent relationship on the air, lands, waters, animals, you know, plants around us. But particular, I think I turn to a quote that a non-native legal scholar once said. It was a man named Felix Cohen. He used to serve as general counsel for the Association on American Indian Affairs back in the 1940s and 50s. And he said Indians were like a miner's canary, giving really the public a warning of dangers to come. And I think when it comes to these sensitive protected lands that are already protected, right, that America and its government and Native nations have already secured for protection, mm-hmm. that it's important for all of us to take care and continue to take care of these lands because our overall health, our personal health, as well as our collective health is reliant on having clean air and water, and these lands are the key to that.
All right. Shannon, that's an interesting quote. And what worries me about that is those canaries in those coal mines, they died. We'll be right back after this break.
This program is supported by AmeriCorps Vista. Through service with AmeriCorps Vista, you gain valuable professional experience and leadership skills while helping organizations in your community alleviate poverty. Find a service opportunity at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista today. That's AmeriCorps.gov/Vista. The Alaska Native Art Auction Gala is March 21st, 2025 in Anchorage, Alaska. Please consider donating art and help Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation raise needed funds. Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation's mission is to be the leader in bringing Native voices to Alaska and the nation. With your support, we're able to produce such programs as National Native News, Native America Calling, and more. Donor forms and more information about the auction can be found at knba.org. Anyone who donates art before February 14th will be automatically entered into a drawing to win $500. Are you or someone you care about looking to take their education to the next level? Native Forward Scholars Fund is here to help. With awards up to $30,000, Native Forward Scholars Fund is dedicated to supporting Native students as they pursue higher education. With Native Forward Scholarships, you can overcome financial barriers and open doors to a world of opportunities. Native Forward Scholars Fund, working to build a brighter future and empower Native students one scholarship at a time. Info and applications at nativeforward.org who support this show. See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com. educators. Ready to transform Indigenous education? The NISN School Design Fellowship is accepting community letters of interest through January 31st at NACAinspiredschoolsnetwork.org, who support this show.
Thank you for listening to Native America Calling. Members of Congress are considering a bill to strip presidential power to protect sacred and culturally important land. Is this an issue people in your community are talking about? If so, what are they saying? What are their concerns? What are their thoughts? Call us at 1-800-996-2848. Let us know. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's now bring Arnold Thomas into the conversation. He is the vice chairman for the Shoshone Paiute Tribes of the Duck Valley Indian Reservation. And Vice Chairman Thomas, thank you again for joining the show today. And let's talk about your tribe. And it's part in a coalition that unsuccessfully pushed for Joe Biden to designate Owyhee Canyon lands as a national monument. Can you start off by telling us more about this place and its significance?
Yes, Sean. Similar to a lot of our other relatives throughout North America and the world, the way it was explained to us by our elders is when everything was being created by the Creator placed everything within the Owyhee Canyon lands. You know, everything we needed for sustenance to sustain life, everything's there, similar to a lot of other sacred areas. So that's the best translation I have for the territory there. That you know, begins there in right near our reservation, southwestern Idaho, Duck Valley, and that's the southern north of the canyon, the beginning, and then it travels. Unfortunately, you have state lines, Nevada, Idaho, Oregon. Prior to being any state lines, our ancestors lived and survived throughout that territory as it expands over into Oregon.
Vice Chairman Thomas, is there now a significant threat to that land? And if so, please describe it.
So you indicated earlier regarding the initiative. The initiative that we had on the table provided a resolution from our Shoshone Paiute Tribes in Duck Valley, a resolution, as well as a resolution from the Tribal Council in Fort McDermott, Nevada, and the Klamath Falls, Oregon tribes, in addition to support from other tribal nations and various senators, governor of Oregon, as well as other politicians and 32 NGOs were in support of the effort. Now, this particular location is, you know, our ancestral lands. It's the Shoshone Atlantic up in Fort Hall. As I mentioned, Fort McDermott, the Burns, Paiutes in Oregon, and others, like you mentioned, Klamath Falls, the relatives up in the Warm Springs and throughout that whole territory in Oregon, the Great Basin, prior to any state boundaries being placed there. And so it's a significant area that has a vast amount of cultural resources. You know, and I know over the years we made efforts to protect it by utilizing the support from Senator Mike Crapo of Idaho and other senators regarding the Owyhee Initiative, protecting some of the water tributaries in other areas in the Owyhee Canyon lands, as well as the Wilderness Act. So there's been effort on our tribal nations to have some of that protected, but at the end of the day, the effort is to have it all protected amongst all the tribal nations and all the other individuals who enjoy the territory. It was explained by the elders that it is the best kept secret other than the Grand Canyon in the lower 48 states. So it's a very logistical territory for us and beautiful.
Well, going forward, how do you folks intend to continue this fight for protection of those lands like you described?
Sean, similar to Bear's Ears, I know we were involved with a resolution from our tribal nation when the Hokies approached us and the other tribes to protecting Bear's Ears. And, you know, first and foremost, we have, there's been prayers that have been offered, you know, going way back hundreds of years, and we've added to those prayers and efforts. And so we've been making efforts to unite. I know I've heard traditional elders of North America make reference to the effort to unite tribal nations, and it unity has been one that's evaded us to a certain point. And I know that's been the effort that it is possible. And so we've been working with ONDA, the Oregon Desert Association, and all the other folks. So the plan is, predating these state lines, is to make an effort to bring all the tribal nations of that area all together. With resolutions and to move forward with, we're a part of the Columbia River Basin there, which encompasses all the tribes of the Columbia Basin in the Northwest, to make an effort to unite all the tribes of the affiliated tribes of the Northwest together, and then move forward with making an effort to present this at the National Congress of American Indians to unite all the tribes together again with one voice, and then at the same time working with the various senators who are like from both parties together from the states. And I think we're all aware that tribal nations had the ears of those politicians from NCI throughout the country to make an effort to gather that support and take it to Congress again. And unfortunately, what the previous president, we ran out of time because we did take the resolutions and the effort, the initiative there to D.C., and presented it, and again, we ran out of time with the previous president's administration. So the effort again is to rekindle that fire and gather other individuals to move forward on presenting this here in the future, again in D.C.
Thanks, Vice Chairman. Let's go back to the phones, and we have a person who's calling from your home on the Duck Valley Reservation in Nevada. This is Gary on the line. Good morning, Gary. You are on Native America Calling.
Oh, Saima Santavi. Gary McKinney here. I'm calling from Oahu, Nevada. First and foremost, shout you to our vice chairman for speaking well about the things that are going on our reservation with our tribal government there. And I'm calling to align some of the work that we've been doing as far as protecting the land and the water and the air from the more, the contamination. Obviously, it's been an issue in our territories for generations now. And, you know, we're one of the groups called the People of Red Mountain. We work from, we work for, in opposition of the lithium boom. You know, we started that work a few years ago, and what aligns our work with what Arnold is talking about is, yeah, we're working, doing our part on the ground as far as grassroots. You know, we got different things going on, and one of the things that I want to touch on before it's time's up for me right now on the call is, you know, we really are working to restore that relationship that we had with the original tribes of the area here, the Shoshone, the Bannock, and the Paiute people. Our ancestors were, we would go into the Hawaii Canyon lands as a sanctuary. And, you know, there's 1,000-foot walls there, and the Hawaii River runs right through it. And it's over 1 million acres of pristine landscape. And that was one of the main purposes that we were in support of, that the resolution that the Shoshone Paiute tribes had had drafted and passed. And, you know, it really is a beautiful place out there, you know, and we need to protect places like that, not just there, but across Turtle Island, across the world, from these extraction industries, because, you know, we understand that mining lithium is a project to mine water, and they're just compounding these issues that previous mines had left behind, and our people are still reeling from contaminations, and the cancer rates are still spiking, and it's that's the way that it is around here. And so today, looking forward to continuously building that relationship with our people all over, not just here in the state, not just on this reservation, but, you know, being in solidarity with Chinupa as well there in the Black Hills, and the Apache Stronghold, and Minneapolis, and, you know, all across the country here, there's these extraction industries that are threatening. And you know, we as people, indigenous folks, you know, we should understand the history, know our roots, where we come from, and know the stories, the narrative, and speak about it, discuss it. You know, we have this platform now, and so we utilize it in a good way, you know, and spreading that message of unity. And through actions like prayer horse riding, and, you know, we're taking the initiative, and
all right,
we're up against that ancient evil here in our state, the Great Basin and the Columbia Basin, and you know, inviting our relatives to come join us in a good way.
All right, Gary, I really, really appreciate your call, brother. That's you've got a lot of beautiful words to share here on our show today. And Vice Chairman, I'd like you to comment a little bit more. Gary mentions the lithium mining industry as one threat. Are there other threats that you folks are taking into account? I'm thinking of maybe housing or other types of energy development. Can you share, Vice Chairman?
It's funny. Well, sorry. It's almost a... but anyway, Sean, I want to acknowledge Gary, my cousin brother. He's been influential in, as he mentioned, Boots on the Ground, People of Red Mountain, working with our elders there in Fort McDermott regarding Thacker Pass. He's given of himself to this point. So I want to acknowledge him for the work he's done there regarding some of our traditional territories, and that is a constant effort. Don't want to say battle, but a battle, and utilizing, as indicated by your relatives there who have the law expertise, utilizing, you know, all the federal laws to protect our territories, everything that encompasses what's there throughout you know, Thacker Pass, Owyhee Canyonlands, and other territories. And I know, Sean, the one effort we've been working on, being in Nevada, is we've been in looking at the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous Peoples. I know I've done a lot of work before being a part of leadership and up in Canada, and I'm aware of the ONDRIP and how First Nations in Canada are utilizing ONDRIP to hold, you know, companies, hydro, mining, and other entities accountable prior consent, and so on and so forth. And I know the relatives up in Canada, the nations are quite advanced from what we've seen when we've been up to Canada regarding the consultation process. And so that's one issue we've been addressing with the mining corporations in Nevada, because a lot of those companies are coming out of Canada. Lithium America, it's a Canadian company. Nevada Gold Mines, Canadian company. There's a lot of Canadian companies in Nevada. And out of all the states in the union, Nevada has the largest number of mines. And I think, what, several years ago, there was literally 70 lithium permits that the BLM was looking to, you know, approve. And so it's been an effort to make an effort to propose some new legislation. And through consultation, we've been providing the input. And so, again, Sean, it's almost as if there's got to be a balance. And what does that look like?
Okay. I'm sorry, Vice Chairman Thomas, we're out of time. We're going to have to wrap up the conversation. But I do want to provide a disclaimer here. We did reach out to two congressmen who proposed the bill to reform the Antiquities Act, and we did not hear back from them by the time we went to air today. Big thanks to our three guests who joined us on the show, Shannon O'Loughlin, Vice Chairman Arnold Thomas, and also Matthew Campbell, who shared their time and their expertise on our show today. Please join us again tomorrow for a conversation about how the actions in President Trump's first days in office are affecting Indian country. Hope you'll tune in. I'm Sean Spruce.
See Renewal's expertise in energy, housing, land use, fire protection, and more in multi-jurisdictional environments helps tribes leverage existing assets, grow capacity, and gain competitive advantage. See Renewal supports this show. SEERenewal.com.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Repatriation is the return of ancestors and stolen culture. The Association on American Indian Affairs and the Tunica Biloxi Tribe will host the 10th Annual Repatriation Conference February 25th, 26th, and 27th, 2025 in Marksville, Louisiana. The conference will provide expert hands-on training about domestic and international repatriation. Registration and more information available at Indian-Affairs.org. The Association on American Indian Affairs supports this show.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.